Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We are in the midst of interesting times, a curse, actually, the Chinese have said for many millennia, and it is becoming the case day by day that those times are becoming both more interesting and certainly more dangerous. This is evident at the moment in the context of the Chinese overheated response to a visit by the president of Taiwan, a woman by the name of Tsai, who has had the temerity to visit the United States, and worse yet, from the Chinese point of view, the Speaker of the House of Representatives and some 20 of his colleagues, on a bipartisan basis, by the way, had the temerity to visit with President Tsai while she was here, out at the Reagan Library yesterday. We are going to take stock of why the Chinese, under Xi Jinping, the newly ensconced emperor of communist China, is in such high dudgeon about all this, and what he's likely to do in response, and more to the point, what we must do in turn as we try to live with this dictator and challenge the threats that he is posing to us and to, frankly, the rest of the world ever more aggressively. I can't think of a better person to talk to about all of this than one of our most distinguished military officers, now, alas, retired, but a man who, during his time in uniform, was extraordinarily important, I think, both as an Air Force officer, rising ultimately to the rank of Brigadier General, but also as a defense attaché in Beijing, and as a strategist at the National Security Council, as well as in other senior positions in uniform in the Air Force. His name is Brigadier General Robert Spalding, United States Air Force retired. He is these days an executive and entrepreneur in the private sector, but fortunately for all of us, he is keeping his hand very much in the public policy arena, specifically trying to raise alarms about the Chinese Communist Party, the threat that it represents, and what we must do about it. That is the subject of two important books he has written and that we have talked with him about in the past, and we're delighted to be able to catch up with him again. Stealth War and War Without Rules. And we're going to get into the insights of both of those books and his recommendations about where we are today and where we need to go from here. But first, let me just say, General Spalding, it is always a pleasure and privilege to have a chance to visit with you and to, well, pick your brains, quite literally, about this epic problem we face from the Chinese Communist Party and what we must do as a nation and as a people to assure the survival of freedom in the face of what this particular dictator has in mind for all of us. Welcome back, sir, to Securing America.
Thank you. It's great to be back, Frank.
So give us your thoughts, General, if you would, on this visit with President Tsai and the Chinese response to it so far and what you think will be coming next.
Well, the entire response that the Chinese have here is designed to shape our efforts with regard to Taiwan. They want to ensure that we essentially self-deter. So if they can get us to believe that by just not talking to the Taiwanese, that we reduce any risk of potential conflict in the Taiwan Strait, essentially they achieve their goal of isolating Taiwan. So, you know, the fact that we have allowed them to, take us into this area where we are begging for contact with the Chinese government and the military, almost like a lost puppy trying to get attention from its master. This is a challenge that we face as you know, we try to navigate this relationship with China. They will always see that kind of response as weakness, and they will continue to leverage it. And so, you know, I think it was important for Speaker Pelosi to go to Taiwan like she did. You know, Speaker McCarthy said he was going to go, and then President Tsai said, "No, let's meet in California when I pass through." It's important that we do these things. The problem that we have, though, is that the Biden administration is essentially crossing streams here in terms of the signaling, because McCarthy and Pelosi are saying we stand with Taiwan, but now Blinken is trying to go and have dialogues with the Chinese Communist Party, almost begging to have conversations with the Chinese Communist Party. This is not the way to treat them. And certainly, I think one of the differences that President Trump brought to the relationship with China is that, you know, they were coming to us for the first time. There are things that the Chinese Communist Party needs from the United States, and to the extent that we can at least make them believe that those things are in their grasp, then they're going to be likely more willing to pursue us rather than us pursuing them. And that will begin to create a balance in the relationship that has for a long time been needed.
Yeah, I'm so appreciative of that point. And again, in part because you speak Mandarin, in part because you've studied closely the Chinese, in part because you've actually lived in Beijing and worked there, as I said, as our attaché, you have an appreciation for some of the, well, psychological, maybe cultural aspects of this. And I think what you've just put your finger on, General, is so important. This idea that we are cravenly seeking to get audiences. And it's not just Tony Blinken, by the way. It's also they're trying to get Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary over there, and the Secretary of Commerce, Raimondo, as well. And talk a little bit about the traditions within Imperial China, for that matter, to say nothing of Communist China, of the barbarians coming and kowtowing before the emperor. Is that likely how this is going to be perceived, sir?
Well, yeah, it's not even just that. It's also ensuring that any dialogues happen at a level that's lower than the rank of whoever's coming to visit with them. So, you know, not only are they now they're just refusing to have any contact whatsoever, but often, even when we are having contact, you know, they're forcing, you know, our senior leaders to meet, you know, representatives that don't even match their rank. So throughout the relationship, you know, and this goes just, you know, living in China, forget about ancient China. If you don't have any leverage at all in a relationship, then I guarantee you what's going to happen is your counterpart is going to take advantage of that. And so, you know, in any negotiations, whether you're, you know, haggling for, you know, food on the street, or you're talking about geopolitics, if you don't establish leverage in the relationship, the Chinese will take advantage of you, plain and simple. And, you know, that is a cultural thing. It took me a year to understand that. You know, you had to treat every engagement with a transactional attitude, no matter the relationship that you had with that individual. It could be very friendly, but they, you have to establish the leverage in the relationship.
General, we have to establish that. We have a short break we're going to take. We're going to come right back to that very important point and insight, though. Stand by. We'll be right back with General Robert Spalding, United States Air Force, retired, right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met yesterday at the Reagan Library with Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen.
He seemed to be channeling the Gipper in standing up for both Taiwan and America in the face of what the former president would surely describe as today's existential threat to freedom, the Chinese Communist Party. Predictably, the bullies in Beijing reacted badly, threatening reprisals for this purported threat to China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. To his credit, Speaker McCarthy doubled down, telling Fox News host Laura Ingraham that he would move legislation to revoke the PRC's most favored nation status and speed up weapons deliveries to Taiwan. Such robustness stands in stark contrast to the Biden administration's default setting of mollifying and appeasing Xi Jinping. That only emboldens the Chinese Communist Party when we should be doing everything possible to deter, delegitimate, and destroy it. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We are conducting an extraordinarily important, very timely conversation with one of the most thoughtful people I know on the matters that should be top of mind for all of us, specifically the Chinese Communist Party and what under its dictator Xi Jinping they have in mind for, well, the world, not just China, not just the United States, but truly the world. Global governance is a term that Xi uses for it. We'll talk more about that with our guest, Rob Spalding, Brigadier General, United States Air Force, retired, in a moment. But before we do, just to sort of tie up the thought that you were just expressing, sir, in Beijing, for example, you've come into contact with what I would describe as Han supremacism, that there's a certain attitude towards the foreigner on a good day, and in particular, if you don't have leverage, as you put it, if you don't command respect, you are going to be badly treated. You're going to get the worst of the interactions, I think it's fair to say. But I would just ask you, is there, as is often the case, you've served elsewhere around the world too, I know, an attitude of particular contempt for those who actually are powerful but don't have the resolve or the will to exercise that power? Could you speak to that point and how that might be entering into Chinese calculations about Joe Biden, for example, and the United States under his administration?
Well, there's a perfect example of just that kind of attitude, if you will. When I accompanied General Fang Fenghui to Mar-a-Lago during the first bilateral between Xi and President Trump, if you remember, Trump was hosting a dinner in Mar-a-Lago with President Xi or Chairman Xi. And, I happened to be in the hotel there with the rest of the People's Liberation Army delegation when we announced that we had launched cruise missile attacks on Syria. For the use of chemical weapons. And then President Trump used that to really reinforce his resolve and his ability to make decisions when he leaned over after saying, hey, we had just struck Syria with cruise missiles. How do you like the chocolate cake? It is this type of attitude and presence that the Chinese respect. And so there's a certain respect when you're looking across somebody that's just as resolved and determined and capable as you are. You have to extend that respect because it creates some risk if you don't. And we have to understand those dynamics. It plays out on the street every day for a foreigner living in China, and it doesn't. There's no difference with that than you're sitting across from Xi as a president of the United States. You know, Xi is carrying the mantle of the Chinese Communist Party, who invokes the power of the Chinese people. You know, an American president, you know, being duly elected as a representative of the American people carries the might of America on their shoulders. And that might has to come through in your presence in front of Chairman Xi. Otherwise, you're going to be taken advantage of. And that's the problem that we've had for so long. They are, in many ways, good interlocutors. They express themselves very gently and kindly. They're very serious in their resolve. And sometimes that personality or that presence that they have tends to, make us think that we're in the presence of somebody that shares our interests, that, certainly agrees with our point of view. No, you're looking into the face of an enemy. And no matter how, kind they may seem, they have a malintent in their intentions. And so you have to always keep that presence about you. I had great relationships with my PLA counterparts, but I always remembered that they're intent on destroying our democracy at all times. And I, you have to take them for who they are and what they are.
Yes. This is so, so vitally important to calibrate. And let me just ask you again, some of this is just reduced to interpersonal dynamics, I suppose. But as you know, General, Xi Jinping spent a lot of time with Joe Biden when the two of them were in their previous positions, number twos, respectively, in their systems. Traveled together extensively, both in China and in the United States. It seems likely to me that Xi has had the opportunity to, shall we say, calibrate fairly extensively on Joe Biden. And most of that interaction was, of course, taken when Joe was relatively, in good health, if not on his game, as they say, but at least in good health. But just if you could, sir, give us a sense of how Xi Jinping must be perceiving this particular individual, who he does know well, and who there is abundant evidence he and his system have captured. I don't use the term compromised anymore. I think that's too benign. But have, in fact, captured as part of their elite capture and influence operations of the United Front Work Department and intelligence services.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why, as a defense attaché, you have to take a polygraph before you go over to do your job in China, because, the government has to know if they have propositioned you, if somehow they've gained some kind of influence over you. By, not just you yourself, maybe somebody in your family or some information they've discovered about you and then essentially let slip. These are things that, whether or not it's found that the Biden family benefited from his relationship with China, which it seems like all the evidence is pointing to that they did. This is a problem. This is why an American military member in a similar position with a family member that had, verifiably through receipts received money from, entities in China would not be eligible for a security clearance, period. You cannot get a security clearance if it's found that you have any kind of financial relationship at all of any kind with China. In fact, when I left China after my time as an Olmsted scholar, I made sure I cut off any contact with anybody in China, because that creates a problem for you and for the government to trust you with, and I was a B-2 pilot, some of the most precious secrets that we have. Yet we have, and it's not just Joe Biden that's a problem. That's one of the things that I've tried to state very clearly in both my books, that we've got a problem in Washington, D.C. on both sides of the aisle in terms of the ability of the Chinese Communist Party to influence our political process through these relationships.
Yeah. And as you know so well, General, and you document in your book, it's not just in the political arena, that's bad enough, especially the commander-in-chief of the United States being in this elite captured community. But it's the business sector, it's the financial elite, it is our academics, it's culture, it's media. It's been comprehensively their pursuit to essentially take down the leadership of our country as a highly cost-effective means of taking down our country. We're going to talk more about how we live with and cope with and defeat, ultimately, which is, I believe, our absolute necessary response to all of this, the Chinese Communist Party, with one of our great authorities on the subject, General Rob Spalding, United States Air Force, retired. Stay tuned for more right after this.
Night in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are speaking for this full hour with the author of Stealth War and War Without Rules, a Brigadier General in the United States Air Force, now retired. I'm sorry to say we could use him in uniform at the moment, that's for sure. His name is General Rob Spalding. He has been very active for decades on the particular portfolio that we're talking about now, namely the Chinese Communist Party, the threat that it represents, that the leadership of it specifically at the moment is, as General Spalding said a moment ago, determined to destroy our democracy. And by that, I know he means, well, destroy the United States of America, full stop. The question is, what are they going to do to advance that agenda? And I'd like to get into some of what's coming, General, in a moment. But before we do, let's just level set on your assessment of the stealth war that the Chinese Communist Party has been waging against us now for so many years, decades. They call it unrestricted warfare, but we've talked a little bit about elite capture, which I think is central to it. But what else have they been doing and how successful has it been, sir?
So one of the things that people probably don't realize is that a lot of the intelligence community takes its cue from the think tank community in Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of experts that work in think tanks, or they call themselves experts on China, you know, big ones like CSIS, for example. Well, so now, you know, when leadership
of strategic and international studies, just for the uninformed about think tanks here. Yeah. Go ahead,
right. And so what happens is the leadership of the intelligence community takes their cue in many ways from, you know, how these experts portray China. And so you have to dig a little bit into the experts and who they are and, you know, what they're motivated by. So first of all, you cannot be a Chinese expert in Washington, D.C. unless you have the ability to travel to China, meet with government officials, Chinese Communist Party members, talk to them, get their point of view. You come back, and then you go around Washington D.C. and talk about what you heard. And this is not just think tank folks. This is also retired 4-star generals and admirals that come back to Washington D.C. and say, I had my dialogue with my counterpart in Beijing, and this is what they had to say. And so then you start to look at the assessments that come out of the intelligence community. And I dealt with a lot of the leadership over there. They said, well, China's not a threat. Why is China not a threat? Or why do I think China's not a threat? Well, because most of the think tank individuals in Washington, D.C. agree that they're not a threat. Well, so let's take a look at the think tanks themselves. Who are they funded by? When you start to look at who their donors are, who sits on their boards, a lot of them are the leaders of corporate America. They have gotten very wealthy on the business relationship between the U.S. and China. And so anytime you have a think tank expert that kind of gets out of line, number one, they face two threats. One is they won't get a visa to go back and meet with their counterpart in China. And two, they won't get funding from the donors. And they're basically threatened with being fired if they create a problem, that the Chinese Communist Party then points out to the leadership of a think tank. So when you look at just,
hold the thought, sir, if I can. There's an important digression here that I think really makes your point in spades. And that is that, again, this is all evidence of elite capture at work, I think. But there is an individual who was previously the president of one of those prominent think tanks in Washington, D.C. It's called the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And it's a prime example of the kind of phenomenon you're talking about, an outfit that has, yes, received large amounts of money from American businesses interested in promoting good relations with communist China. Interestingly enough, the Carnegie Endowment was also getting considerable help from a Chinese national very closely associated with the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. And when this individual, this president of the Carnegie Endowment, was up for confirmation in the United States Senate as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, his name is William Burns, he testified under oath that he had been concerned about the influence operations that the Chinese had been waging against the Carnegie Endowment or through it to the rest of Washington. And he had shut it down when he took over. That was a lie, General. As you know, they have continued both during his time and since to be a vehicle for promoting the Chinese party line. And I just think it's staggeringly irresponsible of the Senate Intelligence Committee not to have held him, up for perjury, among other things, and to say nothing of blocking his appointment to this key position at the CIA. So, again, this sort of incestuous relationship and the influences that the Chinese can bring to bear about it is everything you say, and arguably worse than we know.
Well, I mean, you should not be surprised that Capitol Hill would not be pushing back, because a lot of their donations come from corporate America as well. So, I mean, look, this is common sense. We knew during the Cold War that active measures would be employed against the United States to do the same thing. Now, there's two things that happened since the end of the Cold War: globalization and the internet. And they've enabled this active measures to essentially go on autopilot, and it's not just with, senators and think tank members in Washington, D.C. It's also with individuals through, apps like TikTok. So we've created a world, quite frankly, that benefits authoritarian regimes, because they can, harness the tools that we created in connecting the world, ostensibly to promote freedom and to, essentially promote authoritarianism. We have to accept that. until we accept that, there's no hope for us in essentially maintaining or preserving the republic, at least in the way that the founding fathers had tried to instantiate it. We've got a severe problem in it, and we have to recognize that.
Absolutely. General, you are, among other things, a PhD, as I recall, and you have studied closely things like the economics of this relationship with China. I mean, in a way, you've touched on it here, the people in this country who have gotten enormously wealthy doing deals with or sending pension fund monies or other investments to China and the like. How would you characterize it in your book, War Without Rules? You've addressed this issue, but the economic warfare piece of what the Chinese communists have done, going back to Deng Xiaoping's time with his so-called hide and bide strategy, has been epically successful, has it not, in weakening our country and advancing their goal of taking it down?
Oh, absolutely. There's three things that the Chinese seek from the United States. That's capital, that's technology, and that's talent. And we've been willing, you know, over the last 30 plus years to freely give of all. We, you know, slowly are starting to work on the technology and talent. The capital is still flowing to the extent that, you know, investors, you know, Wall Street sees that they can take retirees' money and send it over there for a quick gain. You know, as I've said many times before,
government retirees, people in uniform like yourself. I mean, it's just unbelievable that they're getting away with this, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Thrift Savings Board was trying to send money to, of all companies, the Aviation Industry Corporation of China that develops the J-20 that's designed to shoot down the B-2. So me being an investor in the Thrift Savings Plan, you know, essentially I'm forced through my retirement savings to invest in my enemy, you know, the weapon system that my enemy is developing to shoot me down. I mean, this is the preposterousness of where the United States has descended to. And, you know, I think part of the other issue that the Chinese Communist Party takes advantage of is the division within our own society. So the fact that we are hyper-partisan, the fact that, having differences of opinions with regard to policy is tantamount to treason, that creates an opening for the Chinese Communist Party to exploit. And they use social media, they use their financial relationships to exploit that, to promote it even. You know, if you remember in Blinken's meeting in Alaska, you know, what did his counterpart say? Well, you know, you guys are the racist, most racist country in the world. You know, look at Black Lives Matter and your challenges, you know, your social and cultural challenges. And, you know, that creates an opportunity for them to attack us as they often do. So we have a number of issues, mostly self-inflicted, quite frankly, self-inflicted issues in our relationships with the Chinese Communist Party that we have to overcome, again, if we want to preserve the republic. It's not, you can have all the aircraft carriers in the world and all the nuclear weapons in the world, but in the end, if your people begin to believe that this democracy or this republic is no longer benefiting them in any significant way, and that China offers a better model, and that we should adopt that model, in essence, have a single party government or an authoritarian system so that better provides for people. That's what the Chinese want. They want us to voluntarily give up.
You bet. General, we have to take another short break. When we come back, I want to pick up on the extent to which they are, in fact, inculcating these very ideas and divisions within our society. We'll be right back with more with General Rob Spalding right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met yesterday at the Reagan Library with Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen. He seemed to be channeling the Gipper in standing up for both Taiwan and America in the face of what the former president would surely describe as today's existential threat to freedom, the Chinese Communist Party. Predictably, the bullies in Beijing reacted badly, threatening reprisals for this purported threat to China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. To his credit, Speaker McCarthy doubled down, telling Fox News host Laura Ingraham that he would move legislation to revoke the PRC's most favored nation status and speed up weapons deliveries to Taiwan. Such robustness stands in stark contrast to the Biden administration's default setting of mollifying and appeasing Xi Jinping. That only emboldens the Chinese Communist Party when we should be doing everything possible to deter, delegitimate, and destroy it. This is Frank Affney.
We're back, continuing a fascinating and extraordinarily timely conversation with General Rob Spalding, one of our country's preeminent experts on China, and one of those relatively few experts on China who isn't, well, in the pocket of the Chinese Communist Party, unfortunately, for reasons he's mentioned, access to China and access to the sponsorship of people who are also elite captured in the pocket of China. General, I just wanted to come back to a point that you made shortly before we had to break. You touched on TikTok as an app on lots of people's cell phones, especially young people's cell phones. And there's been a lot of talk lately that, well, the Chinese are using that app to gain data and information about the users and to manipulate that algorithmically to make their product as addictive as possible. There's been less talk about something that I think you were really just getting at, and that is the extent to which this has become a vehicle for propagandizing, especially our young people, about how horrible this country is. I mean, it's classic cultural Marxism. This division is being fostered by the Chinese. They're the greatest, arguably, racist country in the world, the Han Chinese, telling us that we're racist. But they have been using this to also inculcate in our young people the wonders and the glories of the China model. Talk about this as a form of the stealth war that is exceedingly dangerous and must be corrected. And how do we do that?
Well, you know, so ByteDance is really an interesting and probably the most effective weapon system ever created by mankind. There's two pieces to it, though. And I think we focus on the one piece to the exclusion of the more powerful piece. But let's just look at TikTok as the TV that watches you. So, you know, you watch it, it watches you, and all of that data. So the data that's coming out of it and the data that it's bringing in is then being filtered to a company called ByteDance. So ByteDance controls the algorithms that determine what content to send to you. So we talk about TikTok and this, you know, is divesting of it. Good. So again, this is a TV that watches you. It has really no brain. The brains is ByteDance. ByteDance is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And ByteDance, you know, requirement by law, I mean, it's in their law. They have to do, you know, they have to portray China and the interests of the Chinese Communist Party through its algorithms. And so, you know, while we're focused on, it's almost like a bait and switch. We're focused on TikTok. TikTok is just the delivery mechanism and the way that they record what we do, you know, as a user of TikTok. ByteDance is the real power. And, you know, so it's funny because, you know, we're saying, well, if we can just buy TikTok from the Chinese. It doesn't matter, you know, if that TV is owned by you or owned by China, it's still becoming a vessel for both collecting data about your intentions, perceptions, behaviors, and then returning content that's meant to influence those intentions, perceptions, behaviors. You know, it's a meaningless tool. And I really like the way that the Chinese Communist, you know, as a strategist, created that, because now we can go attack TikTok and we're completely oblivious to the power behind it, which is ByteDance. So, you know, it is, as I believe, to be the most dangerous weapon. It's far more dangerous than a nuclear weapon. Nuclear weapons can't influence your day-to-day life. It can't influence the way you feel about your own self, about your own community, about your own country. ByteDance can. ByteDance does, through TikTok, create those kinds of feelings. And, you know, as you know, it's not just, you know, influencing people. It's also just the mind-numbing or, you know, productivity-killing behavior of just watching videos for hours and hours on end, which, you know, that's what happens when people get on TikTok. They just watch videos for hours on end, and they basically lose all productivity.
Yeah. And to the extent that they are productive, it's probably towards ill purposes. And General, just a quick, again, point of calibration based on your knowledge of what the Chinese are doing. That's not how this operates in China, is it?
No, absolutely not. Well, it is. It is how it operates in China, except that they have a completely different thing. There, they want to make the society productive. They want to make them patriotic. So they want them to be engineers and scientists. So what, you know, but they also don't want them to be non-productive. So they limit the time. Okay, 40 minutes. But when you see the content, you're going to be patriotic. You're going to want to be an astronaut. You know, all of these things. So when you think about it, you know, I grew up wanting to be an astronaut. But if we had had this system, I would have grown up as a youngster wanting to be a social media influencer, because that's what people want to do today. You know, let me go out and make videos and become, you know, famous and have money just on the basis of people watching me in videos. This is what people in America want now. And that's the idea that this is why this is such a great weapon system.
It is indeed. And, you know, I can tell you from my own personal experience, I think my daughter was probably about 8 or 9 years old when she told me what she wanted to be in life, which was a celebrity. And I thought, where on earth is she getting that? And I think it obviously was in part from the folks in Beijing and elsewhere in China who are programming our kids. The importance of this, sir, especially from the perspective of a man who understands how vital it is to the security of the United States that our people love our country, not least that they want to serve in the United States military. This could not be more corrosive, more, well, metastasizing of a cancer, really, on our society. And it means so much more that you're coming forward and holding this up for us all to see in the mirror, to look at very, very clearly, especially against the backdrop of what we're going to talk about in our final block, which we have to turn to momentarily. And that is the distinct possibility that a China that is doing all of this to us and has done for so long under the leadership of a man who seeks to destroy us like Xi Jinping and a party that is all about that as well. Are we at the cusp now of a shooting war with communist China over Taiwan and other real estate, almost certainly, including quite possibly ours? That will be the topic of our conversation with General Rob Spalding on the other side of this very short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to this final installment of a very important conversation with a very, very important and very much needed voice, that of General Rob Spalding, United States Air Force retired, author of Stealth War and War Without Rules. He is in the private sector today, but I think he is continuing to exercise considerable influence, and must, at a time when the public policy arena has to focus on communist China and the threat that it poses to us under the Chinese Communist Party. And General, you have been a warrior. You have flown that B-2 in combat. You understand what is at stake should we find ourselves in a shooting war with the Chinese Communist Party. How likely is that? Will it be just about Taiwan, do you reckon, if it comes, or a lot more besides?
Well, I think one of the challenges that we face is that the Chinese have a significant nuclear weapon arsenal, and it's growing. Yeah, and it's growing faster than it's ever grown before, as do the Russians. And so now, you know, rather than like in the Cold War, where it was primarily the Soviet Union we faced in terms of a nuclear adversary, now we have two adversaries. And Russia itself is in modernizing and increasing the technological capability of its nuclear forces. And so I think one of the things that you have to recognize is that if the United States is to, you know, find itself in a shooting war, there's no telling where that ends. And I think we did a very good job of recognizing the danger of nuclear weapons during the first Cold War and ensuring that, you know, they were used for a proper purpose, and that was deterring war. Today, you know, I think we have, after, you know, 30 years of after the end of the Cold War and fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, I think we've lost a lot of the understanding that went into, you know, how we managed the Cold War effectively. In order to win, we are not going to win a shooting war with China. We are not going to win a conventional shooting war over Taiwan. We do not have the forces or the military might to stop an invasion of Taiwan when the Chinese choose to do it. I've said this time and again. And if we do, we risk elevating it to nuclear war. I don't think anybody in any American would want to trade Taipei for Los Angeles, but you know, that's the thing we risk when we get into a shooting war. So we managed the Cold War quite well. We used nuclear weapons to basically threaten the Soviet Union. If you move into Western Europe, we will unleash everything, and ultimately the leadership of the Soviet Union will be destroyed. We have to prey on the fears of the Chinese Communist Party. What the Chinese Communist Party fears is losing control, being destroyed. So you have to aim your weapons at the Chinese Communist Party and say, look, if you move, then we're going to take you out. This is something that I think we have lost the, you know, we've lost the understanding of this ability to use the power in those weapons to prevent war, and then to work on the real war. The real war is an ideological one. It's an economic one. It's where, you know, people who live in free societies prosper. They live their best lives. And then over time, by economically isolating the elements of the Chinese Communist Party and the Russians and, you know, Iranians and North Koreans and all of those leaders that seek to subjugate their people and making them, you know, create a world that actually has to rely on their own wherewithal, not the technology, talent, and capital of the West, but their own. What's going to happen over time is that is going to corrode and die. And that's why they seek a connection to the West, so that they can keep that technology, talent, and capital flowing into those systems, because they need it in order to continue to keep their citizens, you know, the economy growing, their citizens employed and productive. When that stops, when that relationship stops, then we're in a position where the United States and its allies, who are working in conjunction like we did during the first Cold War, are able to demonstrate the power of our systems. And until we do that, I think we're at risk. So, you know, I think the Chinese are going to invade Taiwan. I think they're going to be very successful at it because they have the power to do it. I don't think that we'll be involved because of the risk of nuclear war. It's going to be just like Czechoslovakia in 1968 or Berlin. You kind of can pick the scenario during the first Cold War. It's going to be very similar to that. We have to get into the mode where we're in. This is a long-term war. It's a Cold War, but it's a long-term war for how people should live. And, you know, we did a good job during the Cold War of representing ourselves, you know, what we believed the right way to be was, and getting allies and partners that joined with us in that. So you got Macron essentially going to China right now and sucking up to Xi Jinping. Those things were not things that were happening during the first Cold War. And that is what the Chinese do. They're splitting us up. They're picking us apart. And instead of coming together, we're fighting amongst ourselves. That's exactly what the Chinese Communist Party wants. So we need people like John Foster Dulles. We need people like Ronald Reagan. We don't have any of those people. They've aged out. They've retired. They've passed away. And all their legacy is lost. And, you know, we need people of character to stand up and recognize the challenge that we face, or we will not survive, at least not in the way that, you know, again, the founding fathers envisioned.
Yeah. Well, this is an important admonition and call to action. And I just wanted to say, General, in addition to your important books, Stealth War and War Without Rules, I've tried my hand at an homage really to Ronald Reagan that starts with the idea of discrediting, delegitimating, and ultimately going at the source of the problem, which is the Chinese Communist Party. The book's called The Indictment. And we've got 9 different charges against the CCP, ranging from its crimes against humanity, its own people, not least, and then 8 different war crimes they've engaged in against us. If they're a transnational criminal organization, which I believe they are, we may have another tool in our toolkit to try both to take down the CCP, but also to encourage Americans who are helping them to realize they don't want to be accomplices to that criminal behavior. General, this is a topic to which I hope we can return with you in the very near future. In the meantime, thank you for your extraordinary service to our country, both in uniform and that you're rendering these days. Keep it up, my friend, and come back to us soon if you would. I hope the rest of you will do the same next time here at Securing America. Until then, go forth and multiply.